Well, good morning. Good to see everybody here today. Interesting Sunday school curriculum. I hope you're following it. If you don't have a copy of it, see your brother Tom Allen, and he'll give you one. Interesting direction that we're going this year, an interesting progression so far in the book of Exodus. And we're at a part, we're just going to go back to where Carl left off. In fact, we're going to go back a little bit into, it's going to mainly do chapter 34 today. Let's look at Exodus 34:24. Let's see. Exodus chapter 24. Exodus 24. Thanks, Tom. Now, to listen to me say that, you never know. I worked on this week, but I've been going through a lot of passages this week, and it's a tremendous chapter. And if you looked at the notes that our brother Carl had last week, my brother Carl, your brother Carl, why we're in that last section, the Lord makes his covenant with his people by blood, and then we're going to go a little bit beyond that to the second half of that chapter today. But let's just take a look in verse 1 and 2 of chapter 24. Now God said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. Now, our title, if you look at the curriculum at all this week, by the title of the message today is A Holy God in Our Midst. And it wasn't so much that he went to them, but that he went so far, and then they were supposed to come to him. A holy God in our midst. There's some day that we're going to be in the the physical presence of God, the Father, and the Son. Holy Spirit's in our heart now, and the Lord. But there's going to be a time when we meet our God. And Moses was bid to come. He had already talked with God on the mount. He'd been given the Ten Commandments. We got to that last week, right? He'd been given the Ten Commandments. He's written them down in something that he can show to the people. And you see that in this chapter as well. But there was a time when Moses, and of course Moses was also spoken to by the Lord in the burning bush. We've gone through all of that. But there was a time when Moses spoke with the Lord. Someday we're going to be in his presence. I've asked Shelley just to sing us a song this morning and kind of set the stage for that thought as we begin our message today. Shall we?
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine, surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in awe of you be still? Will I stand in your presence? To my knees will I fall? Will I praise hallelujah? Will I be able to speak at all? I can only imagine. Hey, I can only imagine. I can only imagine when that day comes and I find myself standing in the sun. I can only imagine when all I would do is forever worship you. I can only imagine, surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in awe of you be still? Will I stand in your presence? To my knees will I fall? Will I sing hallelujah? Will I be able to speak at all? I can only imagine. imagine when all I would do is forever worship you.
And we're bid to worship him. We're bid to worship him. Now you know why I don't sing. Thank you, Shelley. But he says, come and worship me. In all those times when Moses and Aaron went before Pharaoh, he said, let my people go, that we may go and worship. And now they're out there. And I had, and my notes are really a mess today, but I had written down here that they had been through a lot. You know, they had been, as we already heard, they've been in Egypt, what, 430 years, I think it said, 430 years to the day that they walked out. They had been in Egypt a long time. Most of that time was good, as we heard. The last few years, perhaps not even the last few years, just perhaps the last few weeks were terrible. As Aaron and Moses went in before Pharaoh to demand that, you know, God has said, let my people go. And they took away the straw, and they beat the people. The people, not only were they worse slaves, but didn't sound like they were too bad off before that, but they certainly were bad off then. And all of a sudden, why, things turned bad. And yet the theme was there, let my people go, that we may worship him. 3 days' journey into the desert. We looked at that on the map that Tom gave us last week. Let my people go, that we may worship. And finally, they're at that point. And I have down here, let's see if I can find it here. Let's see. Where the fact that they had recently seen the hand of God in the plagues, the plundering of Egypt. They were wealthy. They had asked their neighbors for gold and silver. And God told them to ask their neighbors for things, the Egyptians. They plundered the Egyptians in terms of their wealth. They went out into the Red Sea. They thought they were okay. They went out to the edge of the sea, and then all of a sudden, well, here comes the cloud, the dust behind them. And it wasn't the cavalry. It was the enemy. And they saw the power of God in parting the Red Sea. Tremendous power of God. If anything spoke to them about the power of God, certainly it was walking through those walls of water and maybe seeing fish in the side. You know, I don't know whether they could see fish in the side or not. But you know, seeing those walls of water. And so the kids, maybe even some of the older people, terrified, and yet going through that sea. And up on the other side, and then the sea closes, and they see all the Egyptians killed. They certainly had to believe in God at that point. And yet then they went to a place where the water was bitter, and they complained. Just days after, day or two after, they had seen the great miracle at the sea, and they complained. And then God provided for the tree to be thrown in, and the water became sweet. And then the manna. What will we eat? We're in a desert. 2 million people. Man, we plan ahead for the young people's conference, and that's only 250, 300. How do you plan for 3 million or 2 million, you know? What do you say, 28 rich stadiums or 24 or something like that? I forget how many rich stadiums, but it was in the high 20s. Rich stadiums full of people. That's how many people go to football games every Sunday in the whole country. There was about 20 or so stadiums in the country. Full of people, and yet having to feed them all every day, two, three meals a day. Once in the morning, manna, and it was provided. What a God to worship. We can't imagine his power. We saw his provision. They saw his provision. And then the water in the rock. Strike the rock, and there was water. And then there were some of them there that were veterans. Here it's Veterans Day. You know, and many of them had to fight the Amalekites. Moses, they had to hold up Moses' arms, right, in order to win the battle. And they noticed that when Moses' arms went down, why, they were losing. And so they grabbed his arms and put them back up, you know. And I don't know how long you can raise your hands. When I used to teach, I used to make some of the kids hold their hands up for a couple of minutes before I called on them. That was a little bit of teacher cruelty. But you get into that. But, you know, your hands kind of turn white after a while, you know. And here Moses had his hands held up until that battle was won. So there were veterans in that group, in this group, at the foot of Mount Sinai. And there were also those that were persecuted because they had been persecuted. And today is the International Day of Prayer for Persecuted Christians. And if you haven't gone to that site yet, IDOP, I think it is, International Day of Prayer, IDOP.com, why, International Day of Prayer for Christians around the world who are being persecuted, burned out of their homes, attacked, sexually assaulted for the women. Today's the day of international prayer. And there were people there that had been persecuted, whipped, because they couldn't build enough bricks, make enough bricks. Or maybe because they even complained about the fact that they didn't have any straw. So here they are at the mount, and God comes and he speaks to Moses and says, come up and get 70 men and worship. Now come and worship. That a culmination of the Exodus? No, it was just the preparation. Because as Jorge is going to show you next week, why God's going to give directions on how to worship, where to worship. How to set up this temporary traveling tabernacle hasn't been even revealed yet. No, God is going to reveal that to Moses in the coming days. But he calls them up to worship. And they come and worship him. But they come to worship him. And I've got a, well, let's take a look at that. Okay? Let's take a look at, verse 9. Moses went up also. Moses went up. Also Aaron, Nadab and Abihu. Those are Aaron's kids. Okay, Aaron's sons. I don't know how young they were or old they were. And 70 of the elders of Israel. We read also that Joshua must be in this group because he calls Joshua to come up with him later at the end of the chapter. And they saw the God of Israel, and it was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone. What color is sapphire? Pardon me? Blue. I remember just a few years ago when I was in the young people's group, okay, a few decades ago, they had these rings called star sapphire. Gail, did you have one of them at all? Yeah. What's in it? A star. Yeah, there's rutile crystals. Well, there's a mineral crystal in the sapphire, and when you look at it under light, why, there's like an eight-pointed or six-pointed star. And when you move the ring, why, the star moves. And in fact, I saw one at the Museum of Science the other day, when I was at the museum Wednesday. But I went to the museum just one reason was to see sapphire. Okay? And it took me a while to find it in their rack display, but they had it. Tom, would you come up here a minute, please? Tom, yeah. Now, I've got some pictures of sapphires. These have already been cut and polished. They started around $25,000. They're not that big. Pass it around. Yeah. They're not that big, but check out the color. There are different colored sapphires, but this is the color that Moses is writing about. And the ones, if you look up on the web, on that website, Diamond something or other plus or something at the top, why, they've got all sorts of star of sapphires. They even have, I didn't look to see if they had star sapphires, but they have all sorts of sapphires. You can just pass it around, Tom, let them pass it around. And forth and back. And they can just pass it around, Tom. They'll get it around, don't worry. I don't want you wearing your shoes out for an actor. But here it says here, come up on the mountain. Or they saw under his feet in verse 10. There was under his feet, as it were, a paved work. There, Tim? Oh, Tim's not here. We were talking in the Bible study yesterday morning. Huh? I got it. Yeah, right. I said, boy, Ken Hardesty didn't even pop the mic once, you know, and Jim did. Anyway, paved work. Yeah, the P, right? You're right. The paved work of sapphire stone. Not just a ring, not just a necklace, but a pavement of that stuff. Pavement of it. Under God as he was standing there on the mountain. At a distance. They couldn't see him up close, but at a distance. As it were, the very heavens in its clarity. You ever go out on like the day after a cold front goes by and that sky is a nice, crisp, dark blue, cool, cold, and yet the sky is very blue, kind of a bluish like that. It even looks like that even better if you have polarized sunglasses on, you know. But they didn't have, Moses didn't have that. But anyway, he could only describe it as the sky in its clarity. And God is standing on a pavement like that, like a sapphire. As I stand here, I see a blue tarp in the back, and it's a little bit richer blue, a lot richer blue than that, but yet God is standing on it. And you can see this also in Ezekiel. If you look in Ezekiel, you'll see two or three passages where he talks about under the God, or under the figure, the man, why there's a throne and it appears like sapphire. In Revelation 4, it talks about the rainbow around the throne being an emerald, a greenish color, like one of the stones in the breastplate and one of the foundations of the new temple in Revelation 20-21. But here we see a blue sapphire. So they saw this beautiful scene before them, and God standing on this pavement of brilliant blue. But on the nobles of, in verse 3, but on the nobles of the children of Israel he did not lay his hands. So here's one of those exceptions to that statement that no man shall see me and live. Okay? No man shall see my face and live. Yet there's a number of instances in the scriptures where people saw God in some form and yet lived. Here's one. The nobles of the children of Israel he did not lay his hand. So they saw God and they ate and drank. I wonder what he fed them. Doesn't say that they brought anything. You know, Moses, in fact, to go back to a three-point message, why the people here had been called, okay? They were called to worship, and they came. How did they prepare themselves? Let's go back. I skipped a passage here. It says in verse 3. Let's just go back to verse 3 a minute. They were called to worship. How did they prepare themselves? They prepared themselves this way. Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord, and all the judgments, and all the people answered them. We read this last week. Carl read it. Would answer with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has said we will do. This is that middle of the three times this statement is repeated, or said, stated. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose up early in the morning. How did Moses prepare? He rose up early in the morning and prepared an altar. Prepared an altar. Remember, altars, you didn't have to carve a whole bunch of stones real smooth or anything, because you weren't supposed to. Later on, God says to Moses, don't lay a tool to the stones. He just got a bunch of stones together and made an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Moses was busy when he came to worship. It took time to prepare for worship. You know, we're called to worship. Jesus says, come, do this in remembrance of me. And on a Sunday morning, you know, our hearts should be ready. We should be prepared. Not Sunday morning, but we should be prepared during the week. We should prepare ourselves Thursday during the week as we look forward to that opportunity like we did this morning around the thoughts of Christ on the cross, the thoughts of Christ with his disciples preparing them for the cross, the agony on the cross, the resurrection from the grave. He prepared himself. He built an altar. He sent young men, in verse 5, of all the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. This took a little while. This took a little while. And this was before they even met with God. This was done as a sin offering for their sins. Right? Peace offerings, burnt offerings. And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. In verse 6 and verse 7, he took the book of the covenant. This is what he had written down from the previous visit with God up on the mountain when he got the Ten Commandments and that whole two chapters or three chapters that were subsequent to the Ten Commandments. And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has said we will do, and be obedient. And he took the blood and sprinkled it upon the people. Doesn't say how many of the people. Doesn't say what people. Could have been just the 70 elders. I don't know. Could have been more. Probably wasn't all 2 million, but at any rate, he said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. Then Moses went up, also Aaron and his two children and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. Wow. So preparation led to what? Preparation led to obedience. Obedience. This too, he says to us, as a privilege of worship corporately, That's not the only way we worship. We can worship him privately. At your home, your favorite place, Ken mentioned Thursday night, he just loves to walk with God. Just loves to get up and walk and commune with God, reading his word and talking with God and listening to what he has to say through his word. It's a phenomenal time. Do you spend time with God in worship? Not just supplication and asking for things, but you spend time with God in worship. That's our call, one of our callings, just to worship him. We have the privilege of worshiping corporately. And that's a privilege that a lot of people don't have. You know, it takes sometimes 3 hours to get 12 people together in China at a house meeting. Sometimes 4 hours. And we can come here and drive here and, well, some of us drive from St. Catharines, some come from Salamanca, some come from down the street, you know, up the hill here, you know, or Bayview, you know, South Lackawanna, you know. And, you know, we have the privilege of getting here in about 5 minutes, most of us. Well, maybe an hour for the rest of you, the other three families, but most of us within 20 minutes or half an hour. Colton, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to exclude anyone out east of here, but, you know, it's not far compared to over in Africa when they have conferences and stuff, why some of the times the people walk 5 hours. We went, Ray Stifer and I went to a Gideon's meeting one time, and the president of Gideon International had been to Africa, and the one guy said, well, I started out yesterday, and I've walked 12 hours yesterday and 9 hours today, and I want to hear what you have from the Lord. You know? And that wasn't even worship. That was just to be ministered to. So preparation and then obedience. I had on one of my sheets of paper here, did they first go to the Sinai Cafe for a mocha, you know? I don't think so. You know, Moses did a lot of work that morning and did the sacrificing. And then it says here, so then it says in verse 12, the Lord says to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there. And I'll give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I've written that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua. And Moses went up to the mountain of God, and he said to the elders, and after they had this meal, we don't know what the meal was. We have a very simple meal, bread and wine. You know, don't know what the Lord prepared for these guys. 70 elders out of 2 million people, but it must have been a great meal. If God prepared it, it had to be a great meal. You know, he took two loaves and five fish, and he fed 4,000, 5,000. Later on. So whatever he prepared must have been a great meal. And however big it was, it didn't have to be big, but it could have been. But probably wasn't the manna. I think it was suspected it was more hearty than that, and or more bigger than that. But they could only look on God from a distance. We can see God. We can see God from 2,000, or Christ from 2,000 years back as we read his word. Now they saw him from a distance, from the foot of the mountain to wherever God was standing on this brilliant pavement, deep azure blue pavement. But then he said to Moses, you come up. And he wanted to meet with Moses personally, you know, face to face, privately. And calling, there was preparation, there was obedience. But then there was also provision. And he provided, Moses charged the elders, wait for us here. Verse 14. Until we come back to you. You know, Moses, just like we read about Abraham later on with Isaac, he took Isaac and he took the wood, he took the fire, and they're going, and they see the mount where Jerusalem eventually is going to be, the Temple Mount area without the temple, you know, and a Dome of the Rock and all that stuff. It's just a bare mountain. And he says to his servants, you stay here, and we're going to go forth in worship, and we will come back, right? We will return with the boy. And just as Moses looks up here, or Moses says here to the elders, wait for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them. And Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. Now the glory of God, and there we get to that beautiful hymn that Shelley sang, you know, we can only imagine what that's like. Israelites saw that many times as the glory of God came down in the tabernacle that we're going to study and was there, you know, and we read that terrible passage later on about Ichabod when the glory of the Lord was departed. But the glory of God rested on Mount Sinai, and a cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. So 6 days, on the seventh day after they had this feast, this meal, whatever it was, Moses is up in this mountain 6 days. What's it to be? I don't know how many have ever driven through fog or been up in a cloud with fog in the mountains or hills with fog, maybe at camp in the morning when before the sun first comes up. But just you and the cloud. And we don't know if this cloud was the bright kind of glory where he was, but 6 days. Not with anybody. Just probably Joshua had been sent back by then, probably. Or maybe he was still with them. We don't read that. But just waiting on God. Do we wait on God? Do you wait on God? Do you have moments when you, a time when it's just you and him? Moses had a lot of time here. Maybe you can spend that time contemplating his glory, his power, as they, I just rehearsed what they had been through, the things that they had seen, the glories that, or the power that was demonstrated in the parting of the Red Sea, and the battle of the Amalekites, and the provision of the food with the manna, the provision of water, the very sustenance of life with water in the desert. You spend quiet times with God, worshiping, or spend quiet times waiting on God. It's hard for me to wait. We like, you know, especially in our society today, you know, our society today is geared for now, you know. They go through you don't even go in a restaurant, you go to the drive-thrus, you know, and they mess up your order anyway. But, you know, it's everything is now, you know, and our desires now, you know. Burger King's theme from 8 years ago, have it your way. Got that messed up too. But and it's so fast nowadays. Everything wants fast answers. And they change things on kids' programs every 18, 15, 18 seconds, sometimes 10 seconds, just to keep their attention popping. And kids aren't being taught on TV to sit still and sit quiet and think. They're just entertained. It's like somebody mentioned here one time when they spoke on amusement. A means not, and muse means think. So amusement is don't think. Right? Not thinking. It's just sitting there and being entertained. And meditation and contemplation are totally different than that. Moses had 6 days of it. No CNN, no entertainment up on Mount Sinai. And then, the seventh day, what a convenient day, the seventh day. I wonder if there was a message there after he had already spoken to about the Sabbath. The seventh day, he called Moses out of the midst of the cloud. The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. Here's these 2 million people around this mountain, or at least in front of this mountain. Not organized necessarily in any particular way. They might have organized by families. They might have organized by tribes. But we don't have the organization that we see later on, which we're going to get to in our syllabus, of separating by tribe, three on each side of the tabernacle, to form this humongous cross as you look at it from the east. But and it doesn't spell that out as a cross, but if you take the population of all of those tribes, just of the men, you'll see that there's a tremendous imbalance in the tribes, and yet there's tremendous symmetry in the way God's going to arrange them. So if you look at it from the east, looking down towards the tabernacle, and towards the way they're arranged in the desert, if they arranged it exactly north, south, east, and west, it's a vision of a cross. It's a picture of a cross. Can't miss it. Bruce was showing me that one day as we were studying down at his house. And that's been good to me ever since. The sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on top of the mountain. I don't know what that means to you. Now this area isn't a volcanic area. I mean, it's not a volcano, you know, the area that we're talking about. But if you picture a volcano with, you know, all the magma coming up, flying up, maybe it was just streams of brilliant light coming up from this mountain. Maybe there was sound with it. I know a volcano was loud. But maybe there was sound with it. We don't know. Didn't say anything about that. Well, there was this one passage where it does talk about sound. Loud. If you read in Ezekiel, it talks about the sound, like a roaring waterfall or thunder. Just a very loud, loud sound of the glory of God. So here's this mountain in front of them, just going berserk. I mean, they had come out of Egypt. They had come out of the heat. In fact, it was probably just as hot where they were, although they're near the shoreline yet, and not too far probably. And here's this mountain, and all of a sudden, just after being out in clouds for 7 days, they look at it, and all of a sudden there's this brilliancy of the glory of God on the mountain. Looked like a consuming fire on top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. So Moses went up in the midst of the cloud and went up into the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. You're going to see 40 days and 40 nights throughout the scriptures. The first one had already transpired, right? With the flood, it rained 40 days and 40 nights. Moses is on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And you're going to see that several other times. Jesus was in the desert, wilderness, after he was baptized, 40 days and 40 nights. And it'd be interesting for you to do a study on 40 days and the number 40 in the scriptures. So now he's been on the mountain 7 days, and he begins a time in the presence of the Holy God for 40 days. Being taught about this pattern that he sees in the heavens of his tabernacle. And as you go through the verses in the coming weeks, you'll see the phrase, as you saw it on the mount, when God's telling him how to make certain things in the tabernacle, as you saw it on the mount, you know, as the heavens were revealed, or maybe God unrolled these blueprints in this book. I don't think so, but you know, these blueprints for him and the nice blue ink and all that stuff. I don't think so, but the idea is that he saw this pattern, and I think he saw it revealed to him. I'm not sure. I can't be dogmatic about that, but it says as you saw it on the mount. And these 40 days were spent with intense fellowship with God, intense tutoring, mentoring by God about all this stuff we're going to get into in the coming weeks regarding the temple, or tabernacle, I should say. What a time that must have been. I can only imagine. You know? And yet, that what we were looking at in that song about the future, you know, we look at that time when we're going to be in the presence of a holy God. As I say, the title to the message that was on the curriculum was A Holy God in Our Midst. Francis Schaeffer said, what manner of men shall we be? How then shall we live? Right? We're in the presence of a holy God. We can't see him. His spirit indwells us. We're in the presence of a holy God. How do we live? How do we live? That's the question. Not just when we're going to be in heaven and see him face to face, as the hymn goes, face to face, a blissful moment. But we're in the presence of God. When Moses came down from that mountain after 40 days, he was different. He glowed, right? If you don't remember the story, he had to cover his face when he talked to the people of Israel because his face shone so much. They were afraid of him. You know, when you are in an environment, we get our honey down in Perrysburg, at this Spain farm down in Perrysburg, east of Perrysburg. And as I was walking up to get honey on the way down to Bruce and Shelley's, whatever day it was, they all go together this week. Thursday, yeah. I walked up the back steps to this lady's farmhouse, and could smell the herbs in the garden. She's got herbs and flowers all over this place. And she's got herbs along the pathway. So whenever she walks from the barn up to the pathway or down from the house down, she gets the fragrance of these herbs. And I didn't have any of that on me when I came back into the car, but I smelled it when I walked through it. There's other times when you are in places, you know, if you're in a fire, which some of you have been in, that smoke just lingers. I tried to, when I was in that apartment fire back 30, 40 years ago, I tried to save the clothes. Well, you can save them, but as soon as you get sweaty, that smoke just comes right back, you know, so out into the garbage, you know. It lingers. When I go down to get gas at the Four Corners down there on the way down to Cattaraugus Creek, all you have to do is walk into the, pay your money, and you walk back out, and there's cigarette smoke on you. Because there's a table there where some of the Native Americans are usually hanging out, having a good time, and one or two of them are smoking. And all you have to do is walk through that, and you got the scent on it. Well, Moses walked out of that. Moses came out of that mountain, walked down from that mountain, and he had something lingering on him. He had the presence lingering on him. He glowed. Do we glow when we come out of our time with the Lord? Is there a fragrance yet of his fellowship with us when we spend time worshiping him? Not just right away talking about the weather or doing this with the kids, but is there that special something of fellowship that we've had with him that carries over? Do we allow that to be carried over? Do we allow it to be carried over? That's the thing. And do we want it to carry over? Do we expressly allow him to envelop us so that he shines through us? That's the issue with Moses. God shone through Moses. When he came back and talked to God back up on the mountain, he took the veil off. Let's go over chapter 33. Is it 33? Let's see, I think it is. Let's see. 33:11. Let's go down to verse 8. So it was whenever Moses went out to the tabernacle that all the people rose and each man stood at his tent door. And this is a tent out away from, this isn't the big tabernacle. This is a small tent before the main tabernacle was built. It came to pass when Moses entered the tabernacle that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked to Moses. And all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose and worshipped, each man in his tent door. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. And he would return to the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. You know, there's an interesting, I don't know whose message I stepped on just now, but there's an interesting section, because Joshua stayed at the tabernacle. You know, Moses came back and forth and he had to deal with the people, but Joshua wanted to stay where that glory was, had been, you know, where that shine was. That's another lesson for us. As we mentor people, and we should be mentoring younger people, as we mentor people, you know, they have to choose eventually between right and wrong. And they have to choose eventually between our ministry and what the Holy Spirit reveals to them too. Elijah and Elisha, you know, I'm not going to leave you unless you give me a double portion. I'm not going to leave you, you know. You know your servant, you know your master's going to go up today? Yeah, I know. You know your master's going to go up? Yeah, I know. I'm not going to leave you until I get a double portion of what you got. You know, and as we're with the Lord, and as he calls us to worship, as we prepare ourselves to worship, and as we're obedient to worship, we need to have that zeal that we want to really have that intimacy with God. So this week as we go out, and as you get into this next passage, which in chapter 25, gets into all the stuff that they brought. They had brought so much stuff for this tabernacle, God had to tell them to stop bringing it. But all of this stuff that they brought from the wealth, some of the wealth they had plundered from Egypt when that last day, last night, that last day or night before they left, the morning, as they left in the morning, and they hightailed it out under pressure from Pharaoh, who was mourning his son. They also had their own wealth as well. I've loved the events Bible studies on Saturdays, because as we go through Romans, we look back in those passages that Paul uses. Paul was really well learned. We're discovering Paul was really well learned in the Scriptures, and he goes back over and over and over again in the Old Testament. And as we read the context of those passages, it opens up Romans so much for us. And yet here we're going to see how God has prepared Israel with wealth to build this temporary tabernacle, a dwelling place for those. What they didn't know was going to be 40 years. Okay, and well, there's another 40, right? There's another 40 coming up. So as we go this week, let's spend time in worship. And let's be here next week at 9:30. You know, they were up on the mountain. They went. Those 70 men went. And they were there. Didn't say there were some of them were lingering taking care of their cattle. Didn't say some of them were lingering getting themselves prettied up or anything. You know, they were there. So as we come to corporately worship next week, and also as you worship privately, come prepare. Prepare your hearts tonight, today, tomorrow, Tuesday. And get ready, because he says, come. Do this in remembrance of me. We don't have to go to a mountain. We don't have to hang out in the desert for 40 years. We can just hop in the car and come. And let's come prepared, and let's be obedient to the Lord.